In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by RotoBaller. This is episode 379. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
Doing good. I'm just ready to have some more ball. We'll be in Florida next week, so that'll be fun for spring training and spring breakout. So I'm just ready to have some more live ball. Had South Carolina Clemson this weekend, so that was a lot of fun. Got a lot of good action there. But yeah, we're in full swing mode at this point. We're in March, and regular season's getting close.
I know, technically, what, about a little over 2 weeks away, like 16 days from when we're recording this. So I believe that's what, the 19th and 20th that series is. It's really quick, though. Does it feel weird that they have the series and then come back for like four or five more games of spring training and then, you know, regular season 2.0 begins?
Yeah, I kind of
hate it.
Finds
it a little weird, the timing of it at all.
Yeah, I don't like it, to be honest with you.
It'd be one thing, like, I love that they do the series. I think it's great. But it'd be more like, all right, do it, like, closer to, like, don't have spring training again after. It's just weird, like, oh, hey, you've already played two regular season games. Now here, let's throw in four more spring training games. It's so weird how that is. Like, put it closer to the season. Obviously, you have to give them the rest to when travel. It's a long, long travel, but I always find it weird they do it like a week before the rest of the season. But anyway, we got a little early spring notes episode here. A lot of stuff going on. You know, players hurt, the fallout from it. You know, some hitters having new max EVs. A lot of pitchers having, you know, new arsenals, new velocities. So we'll kind of break down a good mix of stuff here today. But before we do, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at Chris Clegg, MILB. I'm at Eric Ross, MLB, and the show is at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy the pod, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com for more work from each of us. And make sure you check out all the great content available with Rotoballers MLB Premium Pass. Rotoballers VIP Draft Kit comes with exclusive rankings and ATC projections from Nick Mariano and Ariel Cohen. It also includes plenty of content from Chris and I. Sync your leagues with TeamSync to use our live draft assistant and get customized expert advice for your league-specific settings. Our premium pass comes with a 100% money-back guarantee. Go to rotoballer.com/radio and use the discount code TOOLSHED for 10% off at checkout. All right, Chris, let's start off down with your Atlanta Braves here. You know, Sean Murphy with a cracked rib going to be out for, they say, 4 to 6 weeks. I feel like ribs always end up being on the longer end of the time frame given, just from what I've seen. I'm obviously no doctor, but ribs are really tricky. I mean, Tristan Casas derailed his entire season last year. So, you know, are you worried about Sean Murphy? And how happy are you that it might be Drake Baldwin's season?
Definitely concerned about Sean Murphy. I mean, like you said, I've never cracked a rib. I hope I never do.
Yeah, I don't want to.
I'm imagining it's not, you know, very comfortable. And I think it's going to take a little bit longer to actually get back to, you know, full progression. It's pretty strenuous catching. I mean, especially when you've got base runners still in base attempts. Like, you're having to pop and use a lot of your chest in the field and at the plate. So it's not ideal by any means. Everybody's kind of like, oh, you know, it's not a big deal. He only missed a couple weeks of the regular season. And I'm not so sure that's true. I mean, obviously, you look at the timeline, you say 4 to 6 weeks. It's March the 3rd as we're recording this. This happened. I just have a hard time believing it's only a couple weeks of the regular season. I hope I'm wrong, but the team has said that Drake Baldwin could be the guy out of the gate. I think he's ready. I think we talked enough about Baldwin where we know he's an advanced hitter. He's certainly ready for it, but Chadwick Tromp's also on the roster. I offended a lot of Braves fans by saying he wasn't going to start. It's just not going to be the case. And if they don't go with Baldwin, they can go outside the org. There's still some veteran free agents out there at the catcher position. James McCann would be interesting. I mean, Yasmani Grandal's probably washed, but, you know, McCann, at least for a short time. And, like, here's the thing. Like, people are getting so worked up about my post about it, but you can pick up one of those guys on a league minimum for a month and then just DFA him when Murphy comes back if he's healthy. Or then they're the backup to Murphy. Or your Trop's no longer on the roster. There's a lot of ways they can go. I mean, ideally, they give Baldwin the reins to catcher position if they're comfortable. But at the end of the day, they have options, and it wouldn't be shocked if they explored all avenues.
Yeah, I could definitely see them bringing in a veteran. And I kind of feel like they do. Like, if I had to bet money, I'd say they bring in a veteran. I hope they just kind of give a, like, hey, this would be a good little chance for Drake Baldwin to see, you know, what he can do at the major league level. And obviously, this is a very pro Drake Baldwin podcast here. So I think that'd be definitely intriguing, even if it's only for April or so. But yeah, I mean, we already knew that Murphy was kind of needed to get off to a good start this year, I felt like. So he's coming off a down year, you know, most of the Atlanta lineup coming off, you know, a down year, especially compared to 2023. You know, whether it be injury or his performance, I mean, everyone outside of Marcelo Ozuna kind of had a down year in one way or another. So, kind of looking for a nice bounce back from Murphy this year. I actually thought he was going to have a good bounce back because the metrics are still pretty good under the hood. But yeah, this is very concerning. I mean, I've never cracked a rib either. I had a strained kind of in the rib cage area, which is already terrible enough. And that's not even, you know, any type of crack or fracture. So, yeah, definitely don't ever want to have to deal with that, especially as a baseball player with so much, you know, movement in that core area, swinging and throwing. So, no thank you there. But, yeah, Drake Baldwin would be intriguing. You know, obviously nobody else they'd bring in. You know, whether it be Trump stepping up, which it won't be, I'm definitely there with you. Or if they bring in, you know, one of those veterans. I mean, none of those guys would be fantasy relevant. But Drake Baldwin absolutely would be really fun, and definitely still think he's a good buy long term in dynasty leagues for sure. A lot of pitching injuries here. So a lot of big name injuries in general. Like, a lot of these guys we have on here are, you know, I think there's like what, one, two, like six guys in like the top like 75 ADP here. But we'll go over to the Yankees here with Luis Gil. He will not throw for 6 weeks with a lat strain. I mean, they also have Giancarlo Stanton. Had PRP injections in both elbows, though obviously, you know, Stanton's not that exciting anymore. He's good for some power here and there. But, you know, Luis Gil looks like he'll start the year on the IL, probably miss most or all of April. Does that kind of change your outlook for him this season? I mean, obviously he's going to miss some time, so you got to scale back projections a little bit. But any hesitancy kind of going after Luis Gil this year?
I don't think I'd touch him. If I'm being honest, this is a pretty significant injury. And last year, this was the same thing that happened to Clark Schmidt. And Schmidt had the injury May 26th, and he was out until ultimately September the 7th. So I don't know. This is interesting because I also was reported by Brian Hotch. He said Schmidt said his shutdown was only 4 weeks, and Luis Gil's not throwing for 6 weeks. So I think it's going to be a pretty long absence, unfortunately. So I would dare say that, you know, Gil's somebody that at this point you can take him pretty far down your draft boards. You have not picked yet. If you have him, unfortunately, you're kind of stuck in a spot with him. But I think that, you know, given the timeline of where we are right now, like, it's probably midseason. I think it's all-star break time. Maybe best case, but we'll see how that goes. But I don't think it's positive at all.
Now, what about in Dynasty? Is he a guy you would look to, like, if you weren't contending, maybe you look into, maybe you're thinking, like, all right, my team's starting to come together, my contention window, you know, maybe next year or within the next, you know, year or two, would Heal be, you know, especially if Heal was being rostered by one of the top teams that are like, oh, crap, now I got to kind of replace, you know, Luis Heal, would you maybe look to, you know, buy low a little bit on Luis Heal? Obviously, coming off a very good rookie year last year, 350 ERA and 29 starts, 171 strikeouts, a K rate right around 27%. Also had, you know, he's also had a higher walk rate every year of his career as well. Is he a guy you think is a good Dynasty buy right now?
Not in my opinion. I'm far from a Luis Heal truther. The command's just not good. And it got, his walk rate significantly got worse throughout last year. You look post All-Star break and even like in the final month or so, like it inflated to like 13-14%, if I'm not mistaken. The strikeout rate went down all year. I'm just not into Luis Heal at the price. Like, I'm actually surprised that he's not more hyped given that, you know, he was a rookie of the year, all that stuff. But
yep.
I'm not going out of my way to get him. I just don't believe the command's there. And the stuff's fun. Like, there's no denying the stuff's good with Luis Heal, but no, I'm not interested.
Yeah, I'm not really either. I guess it would, if the price sunk low enough, maybe, but yeah, I'm just, once you get past that, you know, there's no like one set number, but I guess if there was, I think 12% is when I start really starting to shy away. And like I mentioned before, like you can get by, like I call it the Freddy Peralta rule, that, you know, if you're like in that 10% range, but you strike out like 30% of guys, I mean, Peralta's lived with that. That's fine. But, you know, start getting 12, 13, 14%. That's why I'm no longer a big Mick Abel guy on the prospect side, because his walk rate has still been chilling up in that, even higher than that range, more like 16-17%, I think. But yeah, obviously Luis Heal is going to be fantasy relevant, absolutely, probably even a decent arm, but
yeah,
you know, I feel like probably the perceived value will always be a little bit higher than I'm willing to pay. But I don't know, if it fell low enough, I wouldn't be totally opposed, I guess. But on the hitting side, with Stanton out for, I'm not even sure how long it's going to be. I don't know if there's like a concrete time frame for Stanton. Just kind of got to wait and see how the, you know, the elbows take to the PRP injections. Kind of looks like you might get some Ben Rice at the DH spot for the Yankees. You know, kind of a odd year for him last year. Only hit 171, but did have 7 home runs and 178 plate appearances. 15.6% barrel rate, 11.2% walk rate. So it has some good metrics there. Doesn't chase much at all. Kind of a, again, kind of a weird profile. Everything's either really good or really bad. You know, Ben Rice, kind of a, maybe a post-type guy at this point, Chris. Any intrigue from you in Dynasty formats?
Yeah. No, I think that there's fun power there. And a lefty in Yankee Stadium is always going to have some appeal.
Yep.
When you've got the kind of power that Ben Rice does. And, yeah, I'd at least think he's worth a shot, just given, yeah, if he has catcher eligibility, which he may not in most formats, I wouldn't guess. But even as a DH, he still has some appeal. You know, there's power there. He should have the first base eligibility for sure. Yep. From last year. And yeah, I mean, he only got in catcher one game last year in the majors. So definitely no catcher eligibility there. But even as a first baseman, like, there is some fun power. I mean, they're still talking about him potentially working with catchers, so that could be fascinating too. But yeah, the power upside with Ben Rice is a lot of fun, so he's certainly a fine target.
Yeah, and like even though the average was super low, like contact rates, both zone and overall, were right in the vicinity of league average. Again, he doesn't chase much at all, you know, much better than league average chase rate, and he hits the ball definitely at ideal angles for Yankee Stadium. You know, gets to that pull side power. He had a 47.7% pull rate last year, only a 36% ground ball rate. So hits the ball in the air consistently, you know, and fairly hard to his pull side. Definitely good things at Yankee Stadium. So, yeah, I like Ben Rice a decent bit here as a buy in Dynasty. Let's move on here. We'll keep it in the AL East. Couple of minor injuries here. Well, hopefully they're minor because they're two There are some fun players here with Baltimore. Gunnar Henderson, lower right side discomfort, should be returning soon, though, they say. And Jordan Westberg, some lower back soreness. Though luckily for Baltimore, if, you know, let's just say worst-case scenario, Henderson and Westberg start the year on the IL. Oh, the Kobe Mayo, we can bring him up, and you know, we have all these guys we can bring up. They'll be fine, you know, for even if it's worst-case scenario. But any concern there with Henderson or Westberg?
I don't think so. I think both guys should be back soon, which, you know, you obviously hope. I mean, Henderson's an immense talent. They've said he's shown improvement. It's pretty precautionary still at this point. I think he'll return to game action soon. I know Westberg, as we're recording this on Monday, he participated in full baseball activities. Orioles do not play on Tuesday, and he's going to return to game action Wednesday if all goes well. So those should be good to go. Hopefully Henderson gets back in game pretty soon as well.
Yeah, I'm not worried, really, and hopefully these don't kind of linger on. Like Henderson's maybe might, but it looks like, yeah, Westbrook, you said, should be back in a couple of days here. Hopefully Henderson's not too far after them. I mean, I have a lot of shares of Westbrook, as people probably know. I'm a very big Jordan Westbrook guy. Just got him yesterday in the Labor Mixed League auction draft. He's my starting third baseman for this year. Have him in a few dynasty leagues as well. Obviously a big Westbrook guy here. Now, a few other big names here. Corbin Carroll, lower back tightness. Wyatt Langford had an oblique strain, which he's working back from. You know, shouldn't, you know, miss any time here in the regular season. Rafael Devers got a little bit of a shoulder issue. Machado also some back tightness here. So four big names there, Chris, with some injuries here, you know, heading into, you know, early part of March.
Yeah, those certainly something to think about. I mean, Langford's oblique is worrisome in my opinion. Like,
obliques are always worrisome. I hate it because everyone knows I freaking love Langford, but you know, those obliques, they have a way of lingering. So I really hope that's not the case here with Langford.
Yeah, you hope that he is okay and comes back fine. I mean, Corbin Carroll, I think, is okay. Like, I'm not worried about Carroll in particular. Like, I think that he'll come back fairly soon.
He's been mashing, too, this spring.
Yeah, he's been awesome. At least it's not the shoulder with Carroll.
Yeah, thankfully the shoulder appears to be fine right now.
Yeah, that would be a little more worrisome. You know, Devers, he's taken batting practice for, you know, several days in a row. He's been working at third base. I think they said he's going to be back in game action later this week. I think he'll probably DH for a little bit before they get him back at third base. So, you know, that one, obviously, you hope that they can push through. Machado is interesting because it's been kind of quiet. Like, he has not played since February 25th, so it's been about a week or so since he played. There's not been much news on him. Yeah, you obviously hope that he's fine. Machado's a great third base target. He's steady as they come year over year. So that one's like, okay, I really want some more info there. But yeah, I think that hopefully he will be all right.
I'm not saying there's anything fishy going on here, but this whole like Devers injury thing, it's like, oh, this is an easy way for them to move him off of third base to DH and put Bregman at third. I've kind of wondered that. I mean, I don't know. Again, I'm not going to insinuate anything, but kind of odd timing with this Devers injury. But yeah, I think he's going to be fine. I think Machado should be fine here. Hopefully Corbin Carroll is fine. Those, you know, backs have a way. That's why I'm always, you know, that's why I always say backs, you know, and obliques obviously in the back somewhere. No, I'm not exactly sure which muscle it is in the back, but you know, I think obliques, what, that's lower back, right? Middle
side.
Part.
Yeah.
Yeah, like middle side. Yeah, kind of like rounding out the side. Yeah. I think I'm back in like health class or something like that. But yeah, backs always worry me, obviously. I mean, Evan Carter, you know, well, we talked about him several times. So, you know, hopefully, you know, no issues here with Carroll and Machado moving forward. But not liking all these big names here that are hurt so far this spring. But I mean, it's not that uncommon. Obviously, everyone kind of ramping back up. Your body's like, hey, you know, we're doing full activity again, so you're bound to get your aches and pangs along the way. Last two here before we move on from injury stuff. Parker Meadows, nerve issue in his right arm. You know, nerve issues are never good, but And then Heliot Ramos, right oblique soreness. So not a strain, just soreness there with Ramos. But any concern from you for these two?
Yeah, Meadows is one that where it's like, okay, like, does this linger? How does this affect him? There's a lot of different things with Meadows, and there's no timetable for his return at all. So, yeah, I think you have to factor that in. He's certainly somebody that people really liked in drafts, and obviously now it's like, I don't know. I mean, Ramos, he's still questionable when he returns as well. He's been hitting the cage for a while. He's throwing, but we haven't seen him back in game action. There's no real news on when it might be. So that's another one where it's like, you know, Ramos is a really good talent. I buy into what he did last year, but, you know, how's that affect him? Much like Langford, it's not, I guess, to the extent soreness and strain a little bit different, but, you know, at the same time, like, still could be worrisome.
I like Ramos a good bit this year, and I was looking, you know, more on the redraft side, but I was kind of looking at his ADP was like 205 or something like that, which, yeah, maybe the, you know, the lingering issue here with the injury might be playing into that a little bit, but I thought that was great value. You know, I was kind of surprised to I was looking at just like San Fran in general and their ADPs, and saw that Ramos was roused at top 200. I was like, man, like you could get like a, you know, 25 to 30 homer, 10 steal, you know, like 140, 150 combined runs and RBIs, decent enough average. Like that's pretty damn good value.
Yeah,
and I feel like he's a decent value in dynasty leagues too. I mean, this could be an annual, you know, again 25 homer, 10 steal type. And that San Fran lineup, you know, better now. Obviously, they had, you know, Chapman last year, Adames this year, you know, decent lineup. They'll be adding Bryce Eldridge at some point later this year, probably. So, you know, definitely a decent lineup at least. So, yeah, I like Ramos a good bit here. He's a little, well, I haven't done one of these for Anya in actually many episodes. Little who you got here. I don't know why I just thought of this other name, but yeah, who would you rather have in Dynasty right now, Chris? Ramos or a Colton Cowser?
I still like Cowser's, the more well-rounded profile. He's got a little speed. He's got 20, 25 home run juice and good OBP skills. So I take Cowser.
Yeah, I think I lean Cowser too. But I think that's fairly close, though. Definitely. And I think actually both are solid targets. I think Cowser's perceived value is not as high as I thought it would be after his decent rookie year last year. Obviously, it wasn't the Jackson, you know, Churio rookie year. Wasn't the Jackson Merrill rookie year, but it was still obviously a solid rookie campaign from Cowser. And the same thing from Ramos. But Ramos has had to be in the National League and one of the best rookie of the year crops we've seen in quite some time.
The best piece of financial advice I've ever received is to pay yourself first. That's why now with every paycheck I receive, I start by putting a little bit away for those rainy days. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns is a financial wellness app that makes it easy to start saving and investing for your future. Acorns lets you get started with the spare money you've got right now, even if all you've got is spare change. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns recommends a diversified portfolio that can help you weather all of the market's ups and downs. Using Acorns, before I knew it, I had a couple thousand dollars in a little nest egg account. Sign up now and join the over 14 million all-time customers who have already saved and invested over $25 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/BBM or download the Acorns app to get started. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 1 compensation provided. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/BBM.
Offer valid on standard browsers, U.S. only.
When I heard about Date My Age, I thought, really? But there I was in my empty, quiet house, my laptop on the kitchen counter, and I typed in my name. Looking for a man between the ages of 40 to 60? Sure, why not?
Date My Age is different. With verified profiles, you can feel safe and secure to explore meaningful connections with interesting and mature singles.
Date My Age made it really easy. I could join and view online profiles for free. All of a sudden, my empty house wasn't so quiet anymore. I got so much attention, it just made me feel seen and alive. Date My Age helped me start a totally new chapter in my life.
Find a friend, a lover, a partner at Date My Age. Get 60% off when you join at datemyage.com today. That's datemyage.com to connect with thousands of singles worldwide. datemyage.com.
All right, let's move away from injuries here and some more positive stuff. We'll go back to the Yankees here. Anthony Volpe had a new max exit velocity the other day. I think that was on over the weekend. I forget which day it was exactly, but he hit a ball 110 after having a max EV of exactly 108.7 in each of his first two seasons here. And obviously, Volpe still had a good amount of steals last year, but outside of the steals, and 90 runs, but outside of that, rest of the profile was pretty underwhelming. Only had 12 home runs after having 21 in his rookie year. Slash line was still very kind of mediocre. 243, 293, 364. Quality of contact in general was below average, especially the barrel rate, only 3.9% there. I know it's only one batted ball. We shouldn't obviously take too much from that, but Volpe in general, Chris, where do you think the power ultimately winds up? We've kind of gotten two different years from him in terms of power. And overall, are you fading Volpe? Are you looking to buy low right now? Kind of where are you at?
I'm buying Volpe. He made a change in the swing down the stretch last year, completely kind of overhauled his stance and swing a bit. And in the postseason, it paid dividends. If you look at the rolling bat speed data from last year, the bat speed was significantly up, like in September, and then in the postseason it took a pretty big leap. And so you couple that, the improved bat speed, with better exit velocities, and I'm kind of buying. Like you said, it's been kind of two completely different seasons for Anthony Volpe. In his rookie year, hit 21 homers and he stole 24 bases and 601 plate appearances. He struggled with contact, and the batting average was lower. Last year in 2024, he came out with much improved contact skills. He still hit 243 and had a sub-300 OBP in the process, but he also hit just 12 home runs, and he did swipe 28. I think that we find that middle ground. I think this year we see him hit 17, 18 homers. Honestly, there's no reason he couldn't get to 20 again. And it feels like he's going to steal you 25 bags. He's 24 and 28 in two seasons. So 20, 25 type, that's pretty valuable depending on what you get from him out of the batting average department. But with the improved contact skills, I believe that Volpe can run a better batting average than 243.
Yeah.
I know the projections are low on him. All the projections are at 243 or lower, and some as low as 232. But I take the over on all the projections on the batting average. I'll take the over on home runs over all the projection systems. Oopsie has him at 18. That's the highest on Fangraphs. Oopsie, if he goes 18-31 like Oopsie has, and if he hits you 245 to 250, there's a lot of value in that, I think, in that Yankees lineup.
I love that name, Oopsie. That's just a great... I love we have Oopsie. All these metrics or... projection system names like X Wobicon. Somebody was like, let's have this word bacon in the stat. Someone was thinking that when they created it. Even though I know it obviously stands for X Woba on contact, but Oopsie and a good new projection. I think Oopsie's actually looking at all of Volpe's projections. Oopsie's the most optimistic on Volpe overall. In terms of a power speed standpoint, 18-31 there. Most other ones are 25 to 28 steals, power more 12 to 16, 17. The Fangraphs projections are pretty optimistic, but I think it's kind of 16, 17 home runs, 25, 28 steals, mid to upper 230s, couple over 240. But I do think that Volpe could also tick that average up a little bit. His contact skills are solid. He's 86% in zone, 79% overall last year, swing and strike rate right around 10%. Those are decent rates. The one thing I just wonder if he hit too many balls into the ground last year, had a 50.6% ground ball rate, doesn't get the ball in the air too much. Launch angle dropped about 6 degrees from his rookie year. Sweet spot rate wasn't anything to write home about, so I think that does limit him to a degree, but Yeah, I feel like you see the best all-around year from Volpe. I've never been like a big Volpe guy. You know, I think there's always going to be some people in every league I'm in that like him more. So I just don't think I'm going to have a lot of shares. He kind of fits into the, you know, they're very, very different ball players. But overall, he's kind of like that Ezekiel Tovar range where, you know, he's just a solid player. I think borderline top 100 guy, you know, probably always will be. Maybe some years where he gets in the back end of the top 100, same with Tovar. Maybe years they drop down like the 150 range overall. But, you know, I just feel like I'm going to, you know, always be, you know, targeting guys, you know, ahead of them, or maybe trying to find the value guys behind them. Not a range I think I want to shop in a lot, whether it be redraft or dynasty. But for Volpe in general, yeah, I do think you see, you know, a bounce back. I think those projection systems are pretty spot on here. I think, yeah, I'll say like 16, 17 home runs, you know, 27, 28 steals, maybe a 250, 255 average. I think the average can definitely tick up. You know, K rate went down last year, which was good. I mean, in the midst of it all, you dropped the K rate about 5%. Walk rate also dropped a couple percentage points, about 2.5%. But you know, overall, still got some value here to be had with Volpe, and still only 23 years old as well. All right, moving on here. The other hitter before we get to several pitchers here to round up the show. Another guy in the American League East, Junior Caminero, absolutely mashing so far this spring, and had the, you know, obviously really good showing in winter ball. But I was kind of wondering this the other day. I mean, I love Caminero, Chris, and I think you do as well. But it's gotten to the point where the kind of the hype around him feels a lot like the hype around Jordan Walker 2 years ago. I'm not comparing them as players, just the hype in general. So would it be worth it, do you think, to at least like see what you can get? If you had a Caminero, are you holding no matter what on Caminero right now? Or would you at least like float his name out there and see if you get an overpay right now in dynasty leagues?
Yeah, I mean, I'm open to trading him. It depends on what the cost is. I think that some people are astronomical, like very high on him. Some are kind of low on him. So you never know what you're going to get. But, like, I still think that Caminero can be a Rafael Devers, Austin Riley type player. That's the kind of production I think that we get from him. And it could be as early as this year. He's still, what, 22 years old? So going to be played in a minor league park with plays like Yankee Stadium. It should fit him exceptionally well. So I don't know. Like, I'm not selling just to sell, but if I get a, like, what would I trade him for? Like a top 40 dynasty asset? Yeah, I'd do that.
All right, now we're going to, I think this is a good time to break out the good old dynasty rankings and see what players are in this range. And I'll put you to the test here. Oh, let's see here. Let's start out with, let's keep it on the hitting side. Let's see, if someone came up and offered you Roman Anthony, would you take it?
No, I'd keep Caminero.
Keep Caminero, all right. What if, this might depend on, you know, obviously, if you're contending or not, but what about like a Corey Seager?
Yeah, I'd take Seager.
All right, what about, I feel like that's going down too far, so let's go this way. What about like a O'Neill Cruz?
I think that's fair. I think that's a fair swap.
Yeah, I have them four apart right now. The other guy in this range, what about like a Jazz Chisholm?
Oh, yeah, give me Jazz all day.
Yep, Jazz, I'm going up a little bit here. I have Jazz up. What about, here's a fun one, because this guy's value range is all over the place right now. You have Caminero, someone offers you, your boy, or one of your boys here on the Atlanta Braves, Michael Harris. Who are you taking?
It's right in the same range for me. So probably positional need. If you need speed, probably Harris, but I could go either way.
So is there any pitchers in this range? I think pitchers would be hard, but yeah, I think that's definitely the range. I have Caminero 35 in my rankings right now. I have like Anthony a little bit lower than I was going up. I have O'Neill, Cruz, Jazzy, and Harris a little bit ahead of Caminero. But yeah, the fact that Caminero is already, you know, easy a top 50 dynasty guy, and yeah, that's the kind of Austin Riley range where I think he can get up into. Maybe never like a top 20 guy, but you know, top 20 to 30 range. I think it's definitely fair for Caminero. You know, potential 35 plus home runs, you know, potential for, you know, a solid, not a great average, but a decent average, 260, 265, maybe 270, something like that. just a really good four category guy. Plenty of RBI, plenty of runs scored. But yeah, definitely, you know, I'm not saying to trade him, but I won't be opposed to being seeing if you can overpay right now, given, you know, it would have worked out great with Jordan Walker a few years ago. I'm not saying Cameron Arrow's going to fall off like that, but, you know, it's always going to cash in on that perceived value for sure. That's, as we've said, perceived value is king in Dynasty. Always has been, always will be. Well, okay, let's move over to the pitching side here. We got Ryan Weathers, Christopher Sanchez, a couple of Detroit Tigers with Casey Mize and Jackson Jobe, and a little New York Mets talk with Clay Holmes. Let's start with Ryan Weathers, you know, here. You know, revamped arsenal. Weathers has been, you know, always intriguing, you know, here and there. He's kind of shown flashes, but then he'd go on the IL or have a couple of stinker outings. So he's kind of always only been in glimpses we've seen, you know, what could be with Ryan Weathers. But looks, you know, really, really good so far this spring, Chris. So how intrigued are you with Ryan Weathers? Like, what do you think, you know, are you looking to buy right now in Dynasty? And kind of, you know, what do you think, you know, future could look like for Ryan Weathers?
I mean, a lefty that's up to sitting 98, and I know it was two innings, but he said 98 from the left side with elite IVB, like 19 inches of vert from 5'9", 5'8", release height. That's like pretty elite pitch qualities, and he had 10 inches of arm side run. I mean, you could comp that fastball from the left side to, like, think about the best left-handed fastballs in the game, and that's right up there with him. I mean, the changeup, pretty devastating as well. Set 88. And I know we're talking two innings, but even if he ticks back, like, 1 mile an hour, like, Weathers averaged 96 last year, so it's not like he could go to 97 and still be really good with the improved IVB and shape. I mean, 15 inches of fade on the change, he showed a new gyro slider, set 90 miles an hour, and a sweeper that registered like an absurd amount of movement on it. Like, if Ryan Weathers can stay healthy and throw strikes, this might be like the next breakout arm. I'm pretty devastated I missed him in Towel Wars Draft and Hold League. Waited a little bit too long on him. That's my fault. Got him in the new Dynasty Killers League that we're in. And fortunately, that's been a month ago at this point that I got him, but I just really think that with what we saw from Weathers yesterday, if he can sustain it over a full season, like, he's lost weight, which is good, like, he's in better shape, I just think this could be a huge breakout. I'm very much in on Ryan Weathers at this point. I think Miami's cooking something down there. Their pitchers have looked really good all spring. And I think Weathers might just be the biggest breakout of them all.
Yeah, they're definitely cooking on the pitching side, not so much on the hitting side. But
trade some of them.
Yeah, they still got a long way to go there. But yeah, Miami arms have always been, you know, intriguing to me. I mean, I could never fully 100% quit Edward Cabrera, even though I should. I mean, I've mostly quit Edward Cabrera. Can never fully quit him, but. You know, Ryan Weathers, even last year, like I mentioned, he had a pretty solid 2024 year. This was limited to 16 starts, but had a 3.63 ERA, 1.18 whip. You know, but the K rate was lower, obviously, so that kind of limited him. So if he's able to miss more bats here, I mean, he sat 95.9 last year with the fastball, but did have, you know, the sweeper had a 51% whiff rate and a 1.18 batting average against, and the slider. He does have pitches that miss bats. It's just a matter of, you know, going to those at the right time, getting hitters to chase outside the zone with them. But he has these swing and miss offerings, and it's not like he used those like barely ever. He used those combined 47% of the time last year. But the fastball got hit a little bit, 313 batting average against, though only two home runs allowed on it. So not too much damage overall. But yeah, if he has an improved fastball this year, I mean, obviously it looks like he is now, but if that sticks moving forward and he still has the two good, you know, bat missing offerings with that sweeper, with that changeup, yeah, I'm definitely intrigued. He's a guy that gets a, you know, decent ground ball rate as well. So a lot of the ingredients you kind of look for in a guy that's going to, either break out or take a massive step forward. They're kind of there with Ryan Weathers. He had a good chase rate last year. Still had an above average whiff rate, even though the K rate was kind of hovering around league average or even a tick below league average. But yeah, definitely very intriguing here for Ryan Weathers. And he's still only 25 years old. So still a very young arm. You know, it feels like he's been around a lot longer than that. So yeah, definitely I'm also in on Ryan Weathers here moving forward. And then another guy that we were talking about a little bit before we kind of came on and started recording here was Christopher Sanchez, whose velocity is up a good bit across the board. We're talking like 2 to 3 miles an hour on three different pitches. And he's kind of started feeling like a Framber Valdez kind of light. And obviously don't want to rank him up there with Framber Valdez yet, but kind of that similar feel, obviously the sinker ball pitcher. But maybe, you know, do you think that, you know, Sanchez, everything clicks this year, could get up there, Chris, in like Framber Valdez range where we're starting to rank him, you know, more as like a SP2, 3 or something like that, depending on your league depth for fantasy? Because in the last year, he's had an ERA right under 3.5 each of the last 2 years. He had a 3.32 ERA in 31 innings last year, though the K rate was only 20.3%. You know, but he's throwing harder now, again, on three of his four offerings. I'm definitely intrigued. You know, if he can start missing more bats, even get up to like a 24, 25% K rate, gives you good volume, you know, lower ratios. I think maybe it's not out of the, you know, realm possibility to see Sanchez kind of vault up and get up at least near like that Framber Valdez, Logan Webb range of pitchers. So, yeah, I think we've both been a little, you know, underrating Sanchez in our rankings here. And I'm definitely starting to correct that here heading into 2025.
Yeah, I mean, he's looked really good. He set 97-98 for two straight starts now. And I know it's a small sample, but he averaged 94.5 last year. So that's obviously notable. And his most recent was over 2 2/3 innings. So again, like, I think there's a little bit of value there that the velo's up that much and it's going to pull back a little bit. But if he sits 96 and okay, then all of a sudden it looks really good. I mean, he threw his new cutter, sits 87, has some pretty good traits to it. So I think that pitch is something where you look and you say, all right, I think that there's certainly things to like there. He has shown a new look slider as well that gets a little bit more horizontal movement than slider he used last year. I think you can see a strikeout jump. I think that's the biggest thing. But as you said, like, he's a great command guy that ultimately has put up good ratios for two seasons now. And if he has this newfound velo and he's able to miss bats, then I'm very much in on Christopher Sanchez. And yeah, I've probably been way too low on him.
Yeah, because he was like the, you know, the safe yet boring guy. But, you know, he's very, and even for a guy with, he doesn't have like a ton of experience. Like, what does he have for career starts? It is like, what, 60-something, I think? 53 starts, 72 overall appearances. He had most of his first year, or 2022, was in the bullpen. But even for a guy that only has 333 career innings, he feels really safe. You know, last year was his first kind of full year, first year over 100 innings. Though he, you know, was a little bit older, he's 28 now, so he debuted a little bit older than most. But yeah, he feels really safe. But a lot of red on Savant Page. It does not give up a lot of hard contact. Like, you know, again, keeps the ball in the yard, obviously with a sinker, that definitely helps. Doesn't walk guys. Like, he limits the damage done against him, but just doesn't have like that elite K rate that we look for here in a real high level fantasy arm. But again, even if he gets up to 25%. Which would be, you know, still a near 5% jump. But hey, he was 24.2% in 2023. So I don't think 25% is out of the question for Sanchez here. So yeah, I'm definitely intrigued and definitely guilty of undervaluing him for sure. Next guy here definitely fits into like kind of the post-hype category. And I think did we talk about him in our post-hype pitcher episode? It was so long ago, I can't remember fully at this point. We probably did. But Casey Mize looks a little different this spring than he has been. He has a new slider. And I feel like with Mize, the arsenal always seems to be tweaked every single year. always looks a little bit different year after year, but new look slider, you know, increased IVB so far this spring. You know, are you kind of what are you taking from this, you know, spring so far from Casey Mize? Are you intrigued by, you know, the new pitch, the increased IVB, or is it kind of too early to tell for you?
Yeah, I mean, I just drafted him at pick 400, and it's how worse draft and hold. I mean, I'll take a chance there and see where it goes. When you get a 3 to 4 inch jump of IVB, like, that's really notable on the fastball. And now he's working with a couple sliders. The splitter velocity's been up, like, pretty substantially. So naturally, with the harder splitter, like, it's getting a little more carry to it. And it's also showing a little more horizontal. So, you know, Mize is interesting. Obviously, he's lived up nowhere near the hype that he had. His first overall pick, that's okay. I think that Casey Mize can still be solid. You know, he's had moments where he's put up decent ratios. He hasn't missed bats. But now all of a sudden, you've got the splitter looking better. You've got the four-seam looking better. You have a couple different shapes with your breaking balls. And I think there could be something there with Casey Mize in that sense. So, you know, I think that it is worth at least seeing where it goes, seeing if it can sustain. I'm not confident that it will, but I do think Mize is going to throw innings. I think he's going to be in that rotation, and there could be some value from him. So I'm at least intrigued to see, you know, what he can do over a full season with this arsenal that's looking pretty good.
The one thing I really want to see with Mize is establishing a go-to out pitch. He doesn't have any real pitch that he can go like, all right, I need to get a strikeout here. I'm going to, you know, pitch A, B, or C. You know, it used to be the splitter way back in the day when he was, you know, top pitching prospect, but splitter kind of backed up a little bit, didn't miss as many bats in the majors as it did in the minor leagues. Like, this was a really good splitter in the minor leagues. So back when he was peak, when him and Matt Manning were, you know, both, you know, top pitching prospects, that splitter, you know, it was absolutely dominant. With Manning, the curveball was his dominant out pitch. Doesn't even really throw it that much anymore, so Mize and Manning look a lot different now than they did, you know, this is back, you know, what, 5 years ago or whatever it is. But, you know, after Mize missed all of 2023, came back throwing harder than he ever had, you know, 95.5 average on the four seam last year, which is really encouraging. But the pitch was still getting, you know, had a near 300 batting average against, had really no big whiff rate offerings last year, though the splitter was all right, 32.2%, but, you know, no pitch had a good batting average against last year. Splitter was 286, slider was 271, sinker was 341. Just didn't really have, you know, the great stuff, but, you know, showed it a bit at times, which is still encouraging. Like I said, the velo is up, so Mize has always shown enough to just at least keep you interested. So, yeah, I'm definitely intrigued this spring if he has a better fastball, see if this harder splitter can lead to more swing and miss. Definitely, at least, I mean, he's still only 27 years old, still young, so throws hard, still has some decent pitches, so definitely keeping him at least on my radar. I think I'm a little lower on him than you are, but I'm definitely intrigued, I will say that. And another one here in Detroit who's, I think, a little more intriguing to most people, Jackson Jobe, you know, adding in a curveball this year, adding in a sinker this year that he did not throw last year. So definitely, you know, Jackson Jobe obviously was already one of the, you know, top pitching prospects in the game, whether, you know, he's number one for you or Painter's number one or Bubba Chandler's number one. Again, we've had the discussion where, you know, it's kind of wide open right now at the top of the pitching prospect ranks. But, you know, adding in two more pitches, he already had, you know, the four seam, the sweeper, the changeup, the cutter. Now he's adding in a curveball and a sinker. Like, this is really exciting here. So I'm trying not to get too excited about it because it's still very early in spring. But, you know, what do you think of the new pitches here for Jackson Jobe, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I think that now you just have several different movement patterns that help. I mean, we know how nasty all three, I mean, his four-seam, slider, and changeup were. Now you get some depth with a curveball, and that two-seam I think could have a lot of value as well. So, you know, I'd expect Jobe to continue to progress. I think he's going to be a very good starter long-term. And to see him evolving as a pitcher at a young age like this is pretty notable, in my opinion. So, you know, I think that now you just look at the deep arsenal of pitches and say, yeah, I mean, Job is who many think he can be, and he's going to be a really good starter for a long time, and is one of the few pitching prospects I think we can say has true ace upside.
Yeah.
I might say that about maybe five or six guys right now, and Job is absolutely one of them. And yeah, I mean, I might bump him back up to my number one pitching prospect. I mean, he's been right there. Like, him and Painter are basically back to back in my overall. So, you know, he already was, you know, maybe the number one pitching prospect in baseball as was last year. Now he adds in, like you mentioned, a curveball with depth, a sinker. So he's coming at you with, you know, five or six pitches any given outing at this point. And it's not like his pitches were, you know, all like average offerings. Like, no, they were, I mean, he had three potential plus offerings. And the cutter was solid as well for him. So, yeah, definitely love that. He has a deeper arsenal now than Andrew Painter does. And for those out there that, you know, kind of look at the walk rate that ticked up last year after it was really, really low the year before that, I'm not worried whatsoever. Job has always shown an advanced feel, you know, good command over his entire arsenal. The strike throwing has always been solid. I don't really have any issues last year with that walk rate ticking up. So definitely all in on Jackson Job, that is for sure. But we end the show here with some New York Mets talk. They already had two pitchers land on the IL with Frankie Montas and Sean Manaea, both of which will miss a part of the beginning of the season. So this rotation that was already kind of a little sketchy, at least for a team that spent as much money as they did on their payroll. So you got Kodai Senga, David Peterson. You know, you rounded out with Blackburn and Canning in the 4-5 now, which I don't think any team wants Blackburn and Canning rounding out their rotation. But Clay Holmes has now gone up to the number 3 starter for them, at least on paper here, to start the season. Obviously transitioning from the bullpen to the rotation. Not exactly a Michael King situation, because we didn't get any starts from Holmes down the stretch last season to kind of go off of, like we did with King the previous year, where I think he made like 7, 8, 9 starts or whatever it was. So, you know, what have you seen from Clay Holmes so far this spring, Chris? Like, are you more encouraged, less encouraged? You know, where are you at on Holmes as a starter here moving forward?
I'm very much in on Clay Holmes as well. He looks awesome. It's really hard to deny what he's shown. I know it's a small sample, so we look at it and it's like, yeah, I don't want to get overly excited about this yet, but his transition to being a starter looks really, really good. Last time out, he threw 3 scoreless, and he struck out only 2, had 3 whiffs, but I think it's the arsenal that what makes him, in my opinion, look like a very viable mid-rotation type starter, because, you know, he's added some new pitches. He has a new cutter. He's got the kick changeup and a slider. I mean, he's got a legit 6-pitch mix now. Sinker all look good as it always has. Sweeper is averaging 15, 17 inches of glove side movement on it. That kick change is going to miss a lot of bats. Question for me is, how many innings does Holmes get? I mean, you hope that he pushes 140. Maybe it's a little lower than that, 120, 130 range. I think they should be really good innings, though. Like, this is a really good arsenal of pitches. And I think he's ready to kind of evolve into being a very solid starter. Like, the evolution he made this offseason is very, very impressive. So, very much in on Clay Holmes.
Yeah, it was definitely, you know, interesting to see what the pitch mix looked like. I mean, you look at what he did in 2024, out of the bullpen, and really 2023 as well. It was sinker 55% last year, which was down from about 70% the year before that. Slider was 23%, sweeper 20.5% through 7 total four-seamers, so not really even worth mentioning there. But, you know, doubling his number of pitches, as you mentioned, you know, adding in the cutter, you know, the four-seamer he already technically had, I guess, but it's throwing it more now. I mean, he threw all 6 of his pitches in his last outing more than 10% of the time, anywhere from 4 on the changeup to 14 sinkers, and a total of 42 pitches overall. Obviously, the velos come down a little bit, as to be expected with him trying to be stretched out as a starter, but still was sitting 94 or averaging 94.8 on the sinker 95.3 on the four seam. You know, it kind of had every pitch seems to be like a different little velocity band here. Like sweepers down around 81, 82, 83. You know, sliders more like 86. You get the cutter at 91. Then you get the four seam sinker around 95. Changeups around 87, 88. So definitely like the diverse pitch mix here with Clay Holmes. I mean, I don't think there's as much upside as a Michael King, but could Holmes be like a, you know, back end top 50 starter? I think that's definitely possible, and they're going to need him to pitch, you know, innings this year. I mean, obviously, I don't think they're going to push him, but, you know, could he even get maybe up 150, 160 innings? Sure, I think that's definitely a possibility. I wouldn't, you know, kind of bank on anything more than that, but yeah, I definitely like, I don't love Clay Holmes, but I like Clay Holmes this year. I was more in on King last year, but I definitely like Clay Holmes a good bit this year. I think he's a solid dynasty buy right now moving into the rotation. But that's going to wrap us up. Thanks to all the listeners for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. We will be back with you again later on this week. But until then, everyone take care.
At me and I feel complete. Then you come at me like the Wolverine, and even though you often turn your back on me, our love goes deeper than a submarine. No, I don't want clay dust inside of you or chemicals in the place you poo. In my arms or in your box, our love will be pure.
World's best cat litter for the world's best cat.